people at the table there who have had an awful lot to do with it and are going to be important players down the road. John Castles, who will give us some his information and background. John is a member of the Murdoch Trust and is most supportive of this sort of activity, the technology development and transfer. And then Randall Edwards, good to see you, sir. The new state treasurer has been heavily involved in this too. And then Don Kramer, hope to hear from him because he's done a lot of work on what we are here to discuss today. So John Castles, why don't you tell us of your interest and involvement in Senate Bill 40.
Thank you, Senator, and Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm pleased to be here. My name is John Castles, and I chair the board of ORTDA. In addition, as Senator Hartung mentioned, I have a background in venture capital. I'm a recovering venture capitalist. I also am privileged to serve the Murdoch Trust as a trustee, and the Murdoch Trust is a good example of an institution which came out of a high technology success story, namely Tektronix. Jack Murdoch was the co-founder of Tektronix. And today, the Murdoch Trust is the 62nd largest foundation in the United States. Last year, we granted $35 million in grants to the Northwest community. And we're one of few foundations that support scientific and medical research. So we've been able to reinvest a fortune which came out of high technology and the new economy area. I wanted to provide you that background as we go through some of these slides. In our presentation, you will hear from a number of other people today as well. We're seeking a $10 million appropriation to reinvigorate, to reprime the economic engine of ORTDA. ORTDA has been a very successful venture fund created by the 85 legislature, became active in 1986, and has accomplished many things which we will review in a slide shortly. Technology transfer is all about the commercialization of research from ideas to inventions to discoveries in our higher education institutes, both public and private in the state of Oregon, as well as some private research institutions. And ORTDA would like to use this money to make investments to help commercialize those ideas and products and discoveries that come out of our higher educational institutions and go into the private sector where they can be funded. Our Senate bill request is very complementary and synergistic with a lot of the higher ed proposals perhaps you're familiar with as well, OSU being a Tier 1 engineering school. Additional engineering student requests, the Oregon University Technology Transfer Fund, and certainly the strength of OHSU's bioscience program. And just last week, the Murdoch Trust had the privilege of granting the largest grant in its history to help cement the merger between OGI and OHSU. So we wanted to invest in that merger because of its significance to the state and its importance as a research institution. We can now look at the highlights of ORTDA to date. I really believe that ORTDA has been one of the most successful economic drivers and engines for the state of Oregon. With an initial capitalization of only $12.3 million, we've been able to fund and help to create over 3,000 jobs. The payroll tax contributed by the employees of those companies, we estimated about $6 million in the year 2000 alone. 21 of the over 50 companies that ORTDA has funded came out of Oregon research institutions, including 20 of the state's 88 biotech firms. And our initial investments have helped to attract $570 million of follow-on capital from other private sector investors. The portfolio has been broadly diversified, and it's not just an urban investment vehicle. And indeed, the fund has impacted rural areas and a lot of Oregon. The objectives of our technology transfer initiative are to provide future economic returns to the state. And this would be by the increase in research ideas that would be flowing to the private sector and become significant companies, which in turn would meet payrolls and hopefully provide a good return to the state, both from the companies that are created as well as the investment returns from the fund. Hopefully you have these handouts in front of you and can refer to some of the details so that we can include some other testimony. I'll try not to be too talkative and touch all of the points. We've been validated by a number of private investors, and it helps us that other technology transfer directors in the state recognize the importance of our role. They call it the Valley of Death, where seed capital is required to prior to a prototype, which is too early for institutional investors, but the business structure is not yet defined. And that scares off even angel investors. So ORTDA, through its investment staff, primarily Bill Newman and Gordon Hoffman, who have tremendous experience in this area of entrepreneurship and technology transfer, would work with the principal investigators, that is the researchers, and help identify markets and needs and help start companies, help with patent ideas and things of that sort. From a prominent angel investor who says, "You are addressing the critical broken link. Oregon has no system to take academic ideas to the private sector. Angels are not connected with the university and research sector, and the universities have no direct ties to marketing and business resources." The chart down below was compiled by Bill Newman and shows some interesting statistics. Oregon's researchers, when compared to their peers in other states, are very productive. Next slide. However, the licensing of that technology, while it is very active, is not generating very much in the way of returns to Oregon when it is compared to its other states, North Carolina, Texas, Washington, and California, just to choose a few of the competitive states. And the fraction of licenses that are granted for that technology typically go to very large companies that are out of state. Large companies oftentimes don't have a vested interest, they don't have the relationships in place, and so the technology languishes and the return to the licenses is not very great. Next slide, please. You might be asking yourselves, is this an appropriate role for state government? Should the state be investing in this arena? And we believe that this arena is unserved. It's too early for angel investors. It's too early for institutional investors. They can't make a large enough investment to substantiate their time. And the previous fund managers, John Ballou and Wayne Embry, did a good job of walking the halls of academia, looking for research ideas, and in fact, commercializing them, and creating some of the companies which have provided us a good investment return today. The high water mark of the fund has been as much as $30 million in the past, and that can be certainly very significant for the Oregon economy. Again, researchers lack the market information and business connections, and we see a lot of other states that are very active in this arena as well. 40 states have allocated funds to various types of investment programs, and we scarcely a day goes by that we don't pick up in the news about other states continuing to make investments and reinvesting in this arena. One good example of a success story is our neighbor to the north, the University of Washington, which incredibly in the last decade has enjoyed $5 billion worth of federal funding for its research and is the number one public research university in America. And they are close to $1 billion a year now of federal research funding.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Hate to break that up, but it's rather eye-opening to be leafing through here and see the name of an old college classmate sitting up there as the vice provost for research for the University of Washington. I attended college with Alvin Quirin.
Dr. Quirum is a fantastic individual and has done a superb job for the University of Washington.
Sometimes we thought otherwise around college. I doubt if he would be anything but shocked to see me here.
sorry for the interruption, but I'd...
Quite all right. That is certainly a success story that we wish to emulate for the state of Oregon. This is kind of a busy chart, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail. You can read this perhaps at your leisure. What ORTDA's role will be is to actually work with the researchers and help the technology transfer offices of the state institutions in the creation of businesses and eventually in forming private companies and launching those successful areas. Finally, this graphic depiction describes the role, starting in the lower left or on the left-hand side. Higher education institutions create leading-edge research and capture a great deal of knowledge, working with their technology transfer offices. ORTDA then plays the first role as an investor in helping to establish companies, helping to manage those companies, helping to recruit management teams, and put the investment capital in necessary to fund the engine for economic growth. I'd like to comment as well on the capabilities and the quality of the staff. And Bill, if you can put up that slide, please, on the interim fund managers. Both Gordon Hoffman and Bill Newman are assisting the board with these activities. They bring tremendous credentials, tremendous education. Both have been entrepreneurs, both have been involved in research activities, and really, I believe, are the best team in the state of Oregon to help us continue to invest in this area for the future. I'd be happy to entertain any questions at this time. We also would like to have our state treasurer, Mr. Randall Edwards, comment on some testimony.
Any questions? Great. Mr. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, and it's a pleasure to be here, and it's really especially a pleasure to see you, Tom, back here.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, state treasurer of Oregon, and I'm here as part of the panel to encourage you to look favorably at funding this package in Senate Bill 40. As a legislator and as treasurer, I have strongly supported the mission of the Oregon Resource and Technology Development Account and the proposed target one-time investment, which is outlined in this bill. As treasurer, I am charged with managing and investing the financial assets of Oregon, including serving as the chair of the Oregon Growth Account, which was set up a number of years ago. The Oregon Growth Account Fund was set up to help startup companies. That is, after something that ORTDA would create, we have the potential to make that further investment. As John indicated, there is nobody in the state, in the public sector or the private sector, outside of ORTDA, putting in what are called seed capital investments. That is, early on, finding those ideas, in this case in the universities, to bring those out, help finance them a bit, and then ultimately coming out to the marketplace. My job as chair of the Oregon Growth Account is to begin to work in concert with some of these ideas as they move along. So I think there's some synergies that, as chair of that account, that I could see we will work in cooperation with them. I think the underlying issue here and the importance is that Oregon's economy continues to transition, as you all know, to an information-based economy, an information-based one. And it's important for us to leverage the intellectual assets of our state as much as possible in our higher educational and research institutions so that we can realize the economic returns from the investments we are making from these institutions. Senate Bill 40 before you is the cornerstone of a package of bills that are here in the legislature to help to set up that infrastructure to encourage an environment of entrepreneurial innovation among faculty in each of these institutions by providing funding support to assist with the commercialization process of ideas. This package, as you may know, includes SJR 17 that would allow public universities to hold stock, Senate Bill 101 that would create a higher educational technology transfer fund, and Senate Bill 102 that would create a higher educational technology transfer account. This package, combined with the enabling legislation for the OGI-OHSU merger, and that's also been known as the Oregon Opportunity, and targeted engineering investments would allow us to effectively compete in the global economy and provide us with the economic returns to maintain the financial well-being of our state. The strong connection between higher education and economic development are clear when you look at other regions. Now let me share a couple examples. Over 37% of high technology employment in the Bay Area is due to technologies and innovations or founders from Stanford University. So one institution alone is creating 37% of the high-tech employment in the Bay Area. Another example, over 60% of high-technology employment in Massachusetts, the entire state, traces its origins to MIT and its founders. Though our TDA and other technology transfer initiatives are needed to help build up this new economy infrastructure here in Oregon, and I think John highlighted some of those aspects, maybe I could bring to bear some of the changes that have happened in Oregon's economy over the last decade. In 1990, there were 3 venture capital firms in Oregon. Today, there are over 17. In 1998, there were approximately $77 million of venture investments here in the state. By 2000, that was over $500 million. As you will hear later in today's testimony, the area of technology transfer and the commercialization investment is one of the underserved areas here in Oregon. Oregon's investments in community supports ORTDA as a key mechanism to building companies using innovations developed in our university classrooms and research labs. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you this afternoon about this bill. It is a good one, and we should move forward to help advance the state's economy. Thank you.
Chair. Senator Fisher.
Incidentally, you have a rather loyal, I don't know if it's a subject or a loyal proponent of this down at the Orenco Systems in Sutherland, Jack Perkins, has corresponded with me, and some of the information he gave me once caused me to ask a question. Apparently, at one time, this was a real going concern and received a rather either poor quality judgment from the Attorney General, or at least was held up in the process by the Attorney General until things had been bled down to the point that it wasn't a viable program again, and was prevented from selling stock and that kind of thing, at least for a time. When was that? Whose reign was that?
Well, the history of ORTDA is an interesting one. I served on the initial board, which is known as ORTDC. And early on in the history, we used debt instruments with which to make investments because of the constitutional prohibition. We then had approval from the Department of Justice to recognize the legislative intent of creating a venture capital fund and thereby holding equity. So they created a mechanism by which it was okay to, we actually termed it a parking arrangement, whereby the stock was held in the name of the fund managers for the benefit of the fund. During the new administration under Hardy Myers, they looked carefully at the arrangement and determined that perhaps that flew in the face of the constitutional prohibition against holding equity. So they then informed us that we had problem securities with the account, and that put us out of business essentially for 2 years, and we are now in the process of restarting the fund. We currently have a total portfolio of about nearly $5 million in public securities. And we also have about $2 to $3 million in private companies, and so that's not sufficient critical mass with which to invest, and that's why we're looking for a restart.
According to Jack, it languished during that period of time from about $30 million down to $5 million.
That's correct.
It strikes me, I don't know whether any of our committee sits on the budget for our Attorney General now, but I'd like to see maybe some of this taken out of his budget and put back where it belongs. If you can't make a better decision than that.
Part of that attrition was due to market conditions. Some of our stocks are still high risk, even though they're public companies. They're in the area of biosciences and life sciences, and unfortunately that sector has fallen out of favor in the public stock markets, and so our values have come down from that high to the current level, which I just mentioned.
Thank you. Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Kramer. I'm a partner at the law firm of Black Helderline. I also serve as Special Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice and which is legal counsel, service general counsel to ORTDA. Literally was retained in November of 1999 to sort of help resolve some of the legal issues. And Senator Fischer, I'd just like to speak to the question. We worked very, very closely with Attorney General Myers and the Office of General Counsel over there. This was a highly complex issue, and I am pleased to report that we have, as to at least one of the securities, resolved the legal issues, and I think have worked very closely with the board and in that. And I think the issue is I've had some discussion with other members of the committee about this, and from my standpoint, I can tell you, at least as a longtime member of the Oregon State Bar and actually former chair of the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section, that I think the Attorney General's office handled this in a expedient manner. And I think the good news here is that we have resolved the issue and can get on with business a little bit. I would just like to make the comment, taking off my legal hat now, putting Don Kramer sort of civic leader hat on, is that there are many choices you guys had in front of you this session. I heard from somebody that revenue forecast is about $113 million below what we expected. That may sort of bounce back a little bit. But typically in a corporation, when you're having a down time, that is the time where you really double up in terms of making investments in terms of research and development dollars. And I think I would just really encourage you, as we sort of make the tough choices here, that this is one bill that actually connects really like some glue among sort of our public and private higher ed institutions, get them in a position to work together, and also, if it's done right, actually basically produce some returns for the state. And so I just like would like to urge your support. Additionally, I'd like to enter into the record, and they're there in your packets. We have letters of endorsement for Senate Bill 40 from Don Van Leeuwenhoek, President of the State Board of Higher Ed, Joe Cox, Chancellor, Oregon University System, Diane Vines, Vice Chancellor of Corporate and Public Affairs, Rich Linton, Vice Provost of Research and Graduate Studies at the University of Oregon, Scott Dawson, Dean of the Business School at Portland State, Mike Driscoll, Dean of Engineering at Portland State, Keith Barnes, President of IMS and a member of the Oregon Growth Account, Hugh Mackworth and Debbie Coleman, Smart Forest Ventures, Bruce Jackson, Pacific Horizon Ventures, Bob Newhart, Oregon Innovation Center, Mike Henderson, Chair of the Portland Angel Network, Tom Holbard, Pacific Law Group, a couple research institutions, Ken Ward from Legacy Research Institute, Adrian Roberts, Patel Pacific Northwest National Labs, a couple of our portfolio companies, and then Larry Wade, Oregon Software, or Software Association of Oregon, Linda Weston, Oregon Entrepreneurs Forum, and endorsements by both the Oregon Business Association, the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section. So literally a lot of support here. We've got lots of people to sort of testify, so we'll get off the stand here. But I would just sort of offer up, this is a very important bill, and the funding of this bill is very important to the life we're going to enjoy here in Oregon over the next several decades. So thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischer.
With all due respect to the gentleman testifying about this process, it sounds kind of similar to the fact that the operation was a huge success, but the patient died.
I kind
of get tired of sometimes we've spent an awful lot of our time making up for attorney general mistakes in this legislative process. And I sometimes wonder if some of these things we couldn't get it across to them that they might, while they're tampering with them, let them go and let them at least live and do their job, and then if they want to make a final decision on it, make it when they've got all the facts instead of stopping everything in the process.
Appreciate your comment. I think we've had testimony that the issue has been resolved and we're on the road again.
Yeah, it has, but look what it's doing to us now. you know, we had a good thing going, and now we don't. Now we've got to try to start it up again at a time when it isn't. The financial prospects are not exactly prime for including a lot of extra things in the budget.
Appreciate that.
Senator, with all due respect, the patient still has a pulse and is just in need of an infusion.
Oh, good. They discovered he wasn't quite dead at the funeral parlor.
Get the infusion from the attorney.
Excuse me before you leave. We've had some discussion regarding how we would proceed with this bill, and there are some alternatives being considered as far as moving it out of this committee to the floor or moving it to Ways and Means. And I think that in order to determine the progress of the bill, we may need some time. In other words, to hold a work session at a later day. So that may be, is that something that you're comfortable with?
Yes, Senator Starr, I'm, as we sort of discussed before, I'm comfortable either way. I would like to, if we can get that resolved and then get it back on right away, that would be fine. We are perfectly comfortable, and I look to the members of the committee because I know, you know, some of the stronger supporters of this bill are on this committee. If we wanted to start a similar bill in the House and have that end up in Ways and Means, we're more than comfortable going that way. And so I literally would leave it up to your guys' judgment, because I, you know, bottom line is, I know each of you know this is an important bill, and my thought was to get over the House. We just need to make sure that I'd rather have it heard over there with a little time and space as opposed to the last days of session when probably the money decisions are going to be made. So I'm looking for your wisdom.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hartung.
May I have a word with Randall? Randall, I'm really happy to see you in the position that you're in. And so I have a question. What does it take to borrow $10 million from the Oregon Growth Account to put into ORTDA? You've got lots of money there, man.
Are you talking about the Oregon Growth Account, Mr. Chair, Senator Hartung? I think right now we've got committed about $12 million, and I have to get back to the specifics. We don't have – that money comes in every year, and it's about $5 million a clip. So I don't know – what I'm looking at is what this is a completely different fund, and the Oregon Growth Account has been very successful in helping leverage, not only in helping actually create some of these firms, these venture capital firms here in Oregon, but also bringing in outside dollars. In fact, you passed a bill to help us find some other money to help leverage the money we bring in. I think you really got to look at this as a separate entity who has a separate mission. I mean, their mission and our mission, and that they can work together. But the finances should be kept apart as far as funding them. We don't have the $10 million to basically put in their pot.
Your credit is sure good, though. Thank you, Randall.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. We have another group.
Go for that price.
And we got four people on the next group, but only three chairs.
We're friendly.
We
got it worked out.
It worked out. Okay. Appreciate you working on that.
I assume my proper place in the back.
Save $3.5 million.
When you're ready, identify yourself and
proceed
with your testimony, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Scott. I'm director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. You heard me testify, I guess it was last week, on the package of bills that you had the bill to create the Council on Knowledge and the Economy, or whatever it is, Knowledge and Economic Development, as well as looking at the tech transfer bills. These all grew out of the joint boards working group that was a combination of the board of staffed and composed mainly of members of the Board of Higher Education and of the Economic and Community Development Commission, along with other representatives of business and higher education. The I guess I would say the Joint Board's working group considered a variety of subjects in the course of its discussion, and one of the unresolved areas that we spent a lot of time on was the accessibility of seed capital for the specific things that this bill would direct the ORTDA or authorize the ORTDA to do. The during the time of the Joint Board Working Group's deliberations, the status, for the reasons that were just discussed, of the Oregon Research Technology Development account was very much up in the air, and the Joint Board's working group ended up not speaking to that issue. But I think that the membership of that group, and certainly our department and the Chancellor's office, are very much on board with the idea that this fills a specific hole that is missing. We certainly, in our department, try to kind of have what we call a full toolkit for challenges that businesses and communities face in Oregon. And one of the few things that we can't identify any resource for is specifically the kind of investment that this bill is designed to focus the ORTDA on. The other kind of irony, I guess you would say, is that earlier in our deliberations, the $30 million number that we were talking about was there, and there it would have been timely, or it would have been nice had we had the foresight and everything else for some of that to be liquidated, and that could have actually provided some of the funding for the other tech transfer activities that we were talking about. Nevertheless, I think we still see, because of the prior successes of ORTDA and the, I think the sharpness of the strategic focus that this bill would give it and that its directors have already given it, we believe that ORTDA can be the earnings that it has can be a long-term source of funding for actual the tech transfer activities at the universities, as well as meeting the needs for investment capital for startup companies. So our department is very strongly in support of this new mission for the ORTDA.
Questions? Thank you.
Chairman Starr and senators and across the room, my name's Leslie Halleck. I'm the provost at Oregon Health Sciences University. I have also served on the ORTDA, ORTDF, ORTDC board for the past 9 years, and have lived through the struggles that have been alluded to in terms of whether or not the fund could take an equity position, and served on the Joint Board's working group. So have been very actively engaged over the past 10 years managing the tech transfer activities at Oregon Health Sciences University, and most recently very actively engaged in the merger with Oregon Graduate Institute. You'll hear a little bit more about that, I suspect, from Ed Thompson. You're hearing from a lot of people today, so you don't need me to reiterate what you're already hearing. I want to address just one little piece of why this gap that ORTDA fills exists. The thing that ORTDA does is funds the intellectual property that universities create before it's really ready for an investment. And you might ask, isn't that research, and why don't federal grants cover that piece? And it's a very important question to ask. When a research activity is funded with a grant, it typically is funding the discovery of new knowledge. It's discovering new ideas and then testing them, and generally producing data around those new ideas that confirm someone's hypothesis about a new invention. And that might be a new drug to treat leukemia, or it might be an electronic device, but it's usually at the stage of a new discovery. If you then want to commercialize that discovery and turn it into a product that could actually be produced, or a service that could be produced and make a profitable company, it's usually necessary to do the next step of activities. Let's take a drug that might treat a cancer, because it's something I know well. If you have cells that are cancerous and you have a drug that you've discovered that kills those cells, you can't take that into a commercial product. Before you can even begin to think about clinical trials and the ways you test it, you actually have to find out, is it toxic in a rat? Is it immunogenic? Will it cause an allergic reaction in a mouse? I mean, there's some very simple things that you might want to do. The National Institutes of Health doesn't fund that. That's not fundamental research in their mind. That's not a new discovery. The drug's been discovered. But it's not at the stage where you can turn it into a product. You still have to do some more testing. It's not rocket science. It's not fantastically innovative in that you're not generating new ideas. But it's the key piece of investment that determines whether or not that invention can turn into a company. And what happens now is those inventions go out of state. Because that piece is missing or not very robust, the in-between, the idea, which people can recognize as brilliant, and the production of a spin-out company, the loss is to Oregon and future Oregon jobs. So ORTDA fills a gap from the university's perspective of investing at that very early, very high-risk stage, but with a track record of having done that very wisely until the sort of various troubles over whether equity positions could be taken. There was never a problem in terms of the leverage of the state dollars producing far more dollars than were originally put in by investing in what are admittedly extremely high risk, because you don't know if those tests are going to work out. So I just want to kind of emphasize that point, that this gap is a very critical one, and it isn't fundable simply by going back to the sources that fund the original research. You'll hear from the business side what their concerns are until that investment's been made, but I wanted to make sure you heard from the university side as well.
Thank you.
Chairman Starr, for the record, I am Ron Adams, Dean of Engineering at Oregon State University. And what I would like to do is also support Provost Hollick's remarks about this problem of the gap. I spent 14 years in industrial R&D at Tektronix, and in those 14 years moved a number of inventions into the marketplace and have a very good perspective of how the academic institutions and their role in the enterprise differs from that commercialization step. And so I'd confirm what Leslie has said about how important it is to get, for universities to get help with that critical step of moving from an invention to at least a working prototype that can generate more interest from a commercial standpoint. And the other thing I want to do is relate this request, Senate Bill 40, to a constellation of other requests that are out there that relate to engineering education in Oregon. Among those include a goal to double the number of engineering graduates and computer science graduates from our institutions, both amongst the Oregon University system as well as including OGI by 2005. That's a partnership involving both public and private institutions. In addition to that, we're also requesting investment to what is called a Tier 1 investment to not only improve programs at University of Oregon and OIT and PSU, but also to establish a top 25 or a top tier College of Engineering at Oregon State. Now, the significance of this bill to that goal, namely the establishment of this top tier College of Engineering, is that basically what we are trying to accomplish is number one is to supply a well-educated workforce to the companies in Oregon and elsewhere. The second thing is to enable economic development that will help create new jobs and additional jobs for that will also require a well-educated workforce. And the key to that, what I'd call innovation, is that being able is basically to take the results of our research and get those into commercial products in existing companies or new companies. And to me, that is a pipeline process that begins with the discovery in the academic laboratory. And we've already heard about some of the limitations on how far that can go. And then, but also building that intellectual property portfolio. And bills, Senate Bill 101 and 102 help establish additional funding to expand the number of patent filings that will take place in public institutions. The second thing is to transfer that those ideas into commercial ventures, and the SJR 17 that proposes a constitutional amendment that allows state universities to hold equity positions will broaden the possibilities for that transfer. In other words, it won't be necessary for companies just to pay cash for intellectual property, but also have the option of paying stock for intellectual property. And so now that enables some action, but I think the real benefit of Senate Bill 40 is to provide the seed funding that will stimulate the formation of those companies that will take that intellectual property derived from research and put it into the marketplace. So again, the two things we want to do is, one is we want to help build a workforce. We want to get the best people from Oregon communities, the best young citizens into OSU, develop them into among the best knowledge workers in the U.S. and place them in Oregon companies. And then the second thing is that we want to help drive innovation, economic development by participating in this pipeline of research results to the marketplace. And Senate Bill 40 will help us do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ed Thompson, president of the Oregon Graduate Institute of Science and Technology. First, I'd just like to say that I couldn't be more supportive of all the benefits you heard about today regarding if we can do a better job of commercializing the technology that comes out of our research institutes and get into the commercial world. Clearly, the state of Oregon benefits greatly. So I mainly want to talk about the things that my two academic colleagues have talked about, and is the great difficulty of that one step in the pipeline, right? And that is how do you get it there? I spent most of my career, all of my career, I guess, in the technology business one way or another in the various phases, all the way from being a professor many long years ago, being an individual researcher in a corporate lab, being involved in various startups, one of which was taking the technology that I had developed as a student and taking it to the commercial marketplace. I was probably involved in one of the first research consortiums in the United States, MCC, where we took competing companies, pooled the money, did research, and then the big problem was technology transfer. Even in that scenario, it was the hardest problem we faced. I was the director of a lab at a corporate laboratory. We had great difficulties transferring this. And then I mentioned to this committee once before, I also spent time at DARPA where I was a director of an office doing something like venture capital, in that we were investing in technology at the rate of $275 million a year, where we were very concerned about not just getting it developed, but how in the world were we going to get it commercialized. Again, a great deal of attention to that, and I can tell you it's very, very difficult. So the analogy I like to think of is, suppose you have a shop floor, and you have all these parts all over the floor that the researchers have sort of developed and sprinkled around, right? And now the problem is the venture capitalists don't have time to look down there in the shop floor. They have to have a real part all put together, a product put together up on the counter for them to look at it and invest on it. And so how do you get it from the shop floor up to this counter? You need somebody with the wisdom and talent and the funds to be continually looking around on this floor and being able to say, aha, you know, if I take this part here, and then ask the researcher to put a little notch there and a little notch there so I can put them together, and then I'll put a little paint on it, now I can put it up on the counter, and now the venture capitalists will have enough vision to see that there's a possibility, right, and be willing to invest in it. So this is highly leveraged money, because we are capable of going and competing at the federal level and getting research dollars to do all those parts on the floor. The VCs have funds to take it from the countertop, but if we don't get it on the countertop, we will have not realized that potential for the state of Oregon, and that's what this is all about. So it's both a fun and the talent of the people, and I worked with Gordon Hoffman for over 15 years, and you couldn't find a better person to be involved, and so we've got to get the parts up on the counter in order for the state to realize all the potential that it has down there on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment than a question. Appreciate the testimony. And piggybacking on something the dean said, because I think of it in terms of the ORTDA proposal, but also a really healthy agenda, probably the best agenda we've had on new economy stuff in quite some time. And I view that in respect to the news that we got this morning that the state is in $113 million deficit, and I think, and this is somewhat simplistic, but I think, and MIT is a good example. I was reading the 1997 study that Bill Newman sent me. I think that is our solution in many ways. In that study, they had founded, graduates of MIT had founded 4,000 companies employing 1.1 million people, which, Bill, you might know, I think that's about how many employees we have in Oregon. So that's one institution is employing directly 1.1 with annual sales of $232 billion. And the revenue that state generates from those sales probably is the Oregon General Fund several times over. And so to me, I look at these and I think, in terms of leveraging other resources and investment, the ORTDA and the Tier 1 and the OGI-OHSU merger, to me, this is in many ways the solution, and also looking at our tax structure to capitalize on our success and capitalize in the best sense. To me, this is almost the solution long-term to growing our economy and ensuring that we can still have a healthy and vibrant education, higher education system. So not so much of a question as a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Deckard. And I thank you very much. Appreciate the quality of the testimony. Group three. Coming up, William Glasgow and David Gunderson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Will Glasgow. I'm a managing director of the Madrona Venture Group, a $250 million venture capital fund headquartered in Seattle. Specifically, I head up the firm's Portland office, and with our presence here, that makes us the largest venture capital firm resident in Oregon. First as a lawyer and then as a venture capitalist, I've been active in the Oregon entrepreneurial scene for the better part of the last 20 years. During that time, I also served as a president of the board of the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry and as a board member of OGI. So in these various capacities, I've had the opportunity to observe the evolution of our entrepreneurial ecosystem and form an opinion about what has worked well and what hasn't. In my view, Oregon has made great strides in attracting mainstream venture capital from firms such as mine. As you've already heard, in 1982, there were really only two local venture capital funds with about $50 million under management. Today, there are over 15 venture firms having over $600 million under active management. These firms typically view themselves as early stage venture investors, which means that they generally invest in the first round involving venture capitalists, which usually occurs after the company is assembled, key members of its management team, written its business plan, and at least developed a working prototype of its product or technology. The seed capital necessary to get the company to this position, and therefore to the point of being attractive to most venture capitalists, usually comes from local angels, wealthy individuals who back interesting ideas, but do so as an avocation. Most venture capitalists do not choose to provide seed capital because it is very labor-intensive per dollar invested. By definition, these very early-stage companies need extra support, yet venture capital firms tend to have very small professional service staffs. So it simply isn't feasible for them to provide the intensive hand-holding and guidance required by most seed-stage companies. This situation is exacerbated when you're talking about technology developed at universities and research facilities. Typically, in these situations, initially, there are only scientists involved. So without business people to assist, there is usually no business plan, management team, or resident expertise to go about the process of raising capital. In fact, there may not even be a clear concept as to how the technology should be commercialized and whether there are large markets that can economically take advantage of the technology. This is why I believe that Senate Bill 40 is critical to Oregon's ability to tap into this precious resource, if you will, the state's intellectual property, which to date has essentially largely been unexploited. Senate Bill 40 would jumpstart the process of creating an environment that is conducive to the commercialization of this technology. It would accomplish this by creating a dedicated fund for that purpose that in turn could hire managers with the right skill sets and interests. This combination of money and people would be focused exclusively on helping professors, researchers, and scientists evaluate the business potential of their intellectual property, as well as, where appropriate, develop business plans and assemble the appropriate initial management teams. Such a fund would go a long way towards addressing a deficiency that currently exists, and frankly, in my view, has always existed in Oregon. The absence of a source of capital combined with appropriate managers focused on the commercialization of raw technologies emanating from academic and research facilities. Now, I know that more is possible from Oregon because our firm alone has invested just in the last 12 months in three businesses that trace their roots to technology invented at the University of Washington, an institution you've already heard something about. These companies have now raised many tens of millions of dollars from the private sector and employ hundreds of people in the Seattle community. And because of the long history at the University of Washington of successful commercialization of university-based technology and intellectual property, this process has largely become institutionalized, and there are now well-established partnerships between private venture firms and the university and its personnel. This should be contrasted with Oregon's institutions, where frustration and failed technology transfer efforts too often characterize the process of technology transfer and related commercialization in this state. I believe the state of affairs can and should be changed. Senate Bill 40 is critical to the achievement of that goal, and therefore I would urge your support of that legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Hi, Chairman Starr and Senators. My name is Dave Gunderson. I am a partner in Erickson Capital. I reside in Southeast Portland. I was educated in Oregon and spent my entire career here. I was first with Arthur Andersen in Portland for 8 years, and then after that was with Sequent Computer Systems in Beaverton, Oregon for 13 years. I left Sequent as a senior executive in the fall of 1999 after our successful merger with IBM. At that time, after I left Sequent, John Castles, who's the chair of ORTDA, asked me if I would assist in a short-term basis in helping manage ORTDA and reposition it for the future. I did so and joined ORTDA as interim fund manager at the beginning of 2000, and I served in that capacity until the end of 2000 when I turned over the management to Gordon Hoffman and Bill Newman. Also during 2000, I became a partner in Erickson Capital, which is a private venture fund. We're in Beaverton. We're relatively small compared to Will's fund, but we're not seed investors either. We're kind of between the major venture capital funds and the seed investors, the angel investors in the venture community. And there is a space there, and it's an important space. My partner and I don't have a lot of resources, though, and so we depend on things like business plans and prototypes and very smart people like Bill and Gordon to help us filter opportunities so then we can come in and make investments at that next round. Over the past year at Erickson, we've made investments in 8 different Oregon companies and diversified industries. They're all in Oregon, and our fund will continue to be an Oregon fund. We see a lot of potential here and no need to get on airplanes and travel all over. So I did enough of that at Sequent. So I wanted to share a couple thoughts with you, both from the ORTDA standpoint, which I became familiar with over the last year, and also from as a member of the venture community here in Oregon. First, there really are a lot of excellent business opportunities right here, as I was just saying, within the Oregon University system. With a little infrastructure, and just some tender loving care and some early seed funding, the probability of success of those opportunities will skyrocket. It's not going to take a lot, but it takes walking the halls of academia and having a little bit of money to do those initial things you need to do, like develop a strong business plan that really propels those companies forward and those ideas forward. Second, ORTDA does have two excellent technologists in Bill Newman and Gordon Hoffman. That will be of tremendous assistance to these companies and also will be an excellent filtering mechanism in bringing those ideas forward. And Gordon and Bill looking at these ideas and deciding which ones will take and which ones will not. For the venture community, that's very important, that filtering mechanism exists. Finally, I do think that ORTDA is the truly effective link between the universities and the venture community. With the proper cultivation and the communication that ORTDA will provide to the venture community, I really think that the venture community will be there at that next stage, at those intermediate stages, to carry these companies forward. So I'm fully in support of Senate Bill 40 and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Hartung.
Yeah, David, thank you for your testimony. You've really got a great background to comment on this. But I want to ask you a question and give me a straight, of course I know it'll be straight, but a simple response that I can take, for instance, to my colleagues in the House and the Senate that don't have the enthusiasm for this that I do, but give me the single most important reason why this legislature should do what you're suggesting we should do. Just limit it to one of the most important reasons.
I think you get so much out of each dollar spent. I think the leverage here is great. And if you can, it goes back to what Ed was saying. You have to be able to take the parts off the floor and put the package here so we can look at it. And I really think the dollars that are spent here will go a long way to doing just that. I do think you get a tremendous amount of leverage in this money. That it's just too tough for us to go to academia and walk the halls, Senator, and so if we can have somebody doing that with that initial funding and getting those things ready, putting the pieces together and putting it here, it really goes a long way.
Good. Thank you.
Senator, if I could just add one thought. Sure. The state is already, and maybe the federal government as well, investing enormous sums in the generation of the ideas. What we're talking about is a very small amount of money to take them to the point where further private money can be leveraged to really turn those into businesses that create jobs and improve the economic base of the state.
Yeah. I also would go to Senator's point over here about the circle here. With these opportunities, the professors, I think, that we'll be able to attract into our Oregon University system, when they see the opportunity here, I really think you get into a circle that just the leverage you throw off from that circle is profound, as you know the MIT example points out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our next fourth group, Donald Hagee, Dr. Hicks, and Rick Mandrell. When you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Don Hagee, President and CEO of Caldas Semiconductor, Inc. We have a laboratory at the Oregon Graduate Institute, and the OGI is a major shareholder in this company, and we're privileged to have the president on our board of directors. Our technology originated in the Oregon Graduate Institute where the ORTDF, as it was then called, supported it very early on. When I joined the company, we received an additional commitment of $300,000 from the ORTDF, and this allowed us to put together some of the parts and develop the technology further to the point where the DOD became interested and provided us with a $1 million SBIR grant. Last October, we were at the point where we raised $1 million of private equity, and we're expecting to be positioned this year to go out for about a $10 million venture round. And I can say clearly, without the early support of ORTDF, or ORTDA as it's now called, this would not exist, and this very important technology probably would not have had the chance for commercialization and the chance to benefit the citizens of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name's Jim Hicks. I'm a molecular biologist, entrepreneur, I guess now, consultant to several to startup companies here in the state. I've been involved as a consultant or founder and now director with six companies started by ORTDX, I guess you'd call it. And I echo Mr. Hagee's statement that I can truly say that none of these could have been started without the funds, the early stage funds from ORTDF/C. One of the most important now in the state is a public company of which I'm a director and was previously a consultant, although I wasn't there at the founding of AVI Biopharma. But it was a classic story in which a chemist from Oregon State had a great idea, but it was so revolutionary, so obscure, if you will, that it took some insight and confidence on the part of the ORTDF group. And they funded that for the 6 years that it took before even private entrepreneurial funding could come in and help out. That's now a public company. They have several drugs in clinical trials and are poised to become a real success story for the state. That covers both coming out of the university and the incubation. I could echo again the need for management, the need for counsel, the need for bringing the parts together, as everyone has stated. It's incredibly important. Otherwise, the technology will just either drift and not become patentable, because the universities can't afford to patent everything that comes down the line, or it will be it'll revert back to the investigators, and they'll try anywhere else, take it out of state to get to sell it, somehow get it funded. So without taking too much time, in answer to Senator Hartung's question earlier, my single statement would be that you're short-circuiting the efforts of increasing quality education and the efforts being taken to improve the university system if you don't bridge that gap. Research funding, research effort, and research quality are all increasing. Venture capital funding, blessedly, is increasing in the state. There's much more economic focus in the state, but between the two, you really need this fund.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Rick Mandrell. I served as president of Timplex Technology for almost 2 years. And in that time frame, Timplex transitioned from core technology development into what I would characterize as the early stages of product development. You've heard pretty much all the issues with why we need to do this. I can offer Timplex as a perfect example of almost all of the issues that have been presented, and even some of those that only have been alluded to in the other bills relative to the educational initiatives. Timplex was founded around a core discovery in optical physics. At the time that it was funded by the ORTDF crew, it was indeed parts on not the floor, but an optical table. And to recognize its potential as a potential product took some insight, and certainly took walking the halls, and it took 2 years of funding from ORTDF to reach a stage that the first private funds were attracted. That was about $1.5 million, and within 18 months after that, the company was able to raise $6 million with Intel Capital as the lead investor. The company currently is in the midst of raising its raising a larger venture round. We are holding our fingers given the capital market conditions right now, but optical communications is still a hot area, and I'm confident they're going to achieve that result. Just a quick note, Timplex also, I think, offers lessons learned relative to some of the other initiatives that have been mentioned, in that, as you may know, Timplex moved to San Jose this last summer due to inability to attract the necessary engineering talent to support the growth that that had to be achieved to be competitive in that market. So you may be hearing from me again in that there are a number of lessons learned in the Timplex story, and I hope that they can have some impact on your deliberations. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
Thank you. How many employees did Timplex have?
The move, we actually moved six people. Timplex prior to its departure had about 12, so about half of the core technical team moved. A number of the administrative, myself, decided to stay in Oregon. Timplex today is about 30 people. So, in essence, in the last 6 months, they've been able to attract a significant number of key technical, and that's primarily engineering people, by the way. Mm-hmm. The physicists and scientists we were able to attract, it was the engineering talent in the optical communications industry that caused the need to move. It's the engineering mm-hmm. pool that we found lacking.
Mr. Chair, that I think the more information you can get us to help drive us to make a decision, especially on the top tier engineering and doubling the number of engineers, which I know are priorities for many members of this committee, but we can help get that information, disseminate it to other members of the legislature, because I think it's experiences that Timplex had and probably numerous others that either relocated or never located here in the first place because of that issue of number of engineers and quality of engineers, that should provide fodder for us in the economic opportunities that we are just not taking advantage of, and it's only to California's benefit that we are not doing it.
I couldn't agree more, and I have many tales to tell when you have time to listen.
Yeah. Thank you very much. No further questions. I appreciate we have another. Jim Cravens. Did we have anyone else that wanted to testify?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association. At this point in the hearing, I know you have another bill. I'm going to say a good bill should pass, and appreciate all the previous testimony, and we'll be working with the group through the rest of the session. Urge your passage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I think that we probably have the votes to move this bill, but there is still some uncertainty among others not in this room about the right way to move it, and so I'm going to defer moving to work session today, and we'll bring it back at the earliest possible time, planning to move the bill in the best, most expeditious manner to either to Ways and Means or to the floor without funding in the bill. And so till we have that sorted out, I'm not going to hold a work session, and I'll work with my committee administrator, and we'll decide when we can bring this back very soon. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 40, and we will move now to a public hearing on Senate Bill 593.
Nobody's signed up.
And we have presently have no one signed up. This is a bill that I put in the mix. We've got some.
He's not going to speak on it at all.
Let's hand out the materials that I brought together for this bill. I'm going to introduce this bill. I'll let Jan tell you what the bill does, and then I'll talk about the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very briefly, this bill directs the Oregon Department of Education to provide an instructional phonics game to each approved Oregon kindergarten. Depending on how you define each Oregon pre-kindergarten, there's 276 Head Start sites and 440 different classrooms. And this would begin July 1st, 2001.
440 classrooms in 276
sites.
Okay.
There is attached a preliminary fiscal impact statement. And because a particular phonics game wasn't identified, there's a range of costs from $22,000 to $122,000.
Committee members, this bill was prompted by my exposure to the phonics game some years ago when I heard about this game being advertised over radio. I ordered the game for my son, who's a missionary in Cameroon, so that he might utilize that in his homeschool program for his 3-year-old and 5-year-old sons who were beginning to be interested in learning, further learning of the English language. And they took it on the road during a trip around the United States where they traveled 10,000 miles in 6 weeks, and when they came back, I was amazed to find that the 5-year-old was beginning to write many of the simple rhyming words that we have in our language, like fat, cat, hat, sat. And he was obviously enjoying the game, and he was enjoying his rapid success and in understanding not only the sounds of the building blocks of the English language, but he was enjoying how he could put those together and make words that he could see and understand. And so I was really encouraged by that. And then during the last presidential campaign, we heard the now President of the United States saying that he felt that Head Start should be made a real Head Start by incorporating a greater component of learning into the program, and that he was interested in moving that program from the Department of Human Resources to the Department of Education. And in order to facilitate at a very reasonable cost this increased opportunity for learning and acquiring knowledge for those pre-kindergarten children, I felt that the provision of the phonics game for those programs so that the children who are being socialized and helped in many ways to become prepared for their learning experience when they enter school, that this would be a good step in that direction. I just got, as you did, the the fiscal. If we applied the 440 classrooms to the cost of the game, which is at retail $250, we would have a cost of somebody help me with the math, something over
$90,000.
It would be something over, yes, it would be approximately $90,000 to provide the program statewide. That's a sizable cost, but I think a very small part of the governor's plan for early childhood assistance and for the promotion of reading in our schools. And so I'd like very much to have you consider passing this to Ways and Means as an idea that hopefully we can find the funds to support and fund for our children. I've provided you quite a lot of information about the game, some testimonies from people who have used the game. The looking at some of the components of the game, it provides, I can't lay my hands on the one page that I wanted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So you'd rather send it to Ways and Means instead of straight to the floor?
I think with the cost figure,
it's over 50. It has
to go to the
Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means, over 50,000.
Okay.
Did we have copies of this for each member? I don't know. There's a handout I hope that you got that describes the game and tells the components of the game. Covers the 44 sounds of the English language and the 43 rules of spelling. Mm-hmm. You.
Well, this talks about it this page.
Yeah, I've got that page.
Okay. That it's a very comprehensive program. Has actually four games that's progressive as the child, as the children learn, and so that it builds on the skills. And so, are there questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hartung?
Right. I'll give you a courtesy vote to send this to Ways and Means. That doesn't signify that I'll, battle to the death for it. But one of the reasons I'm very interested in this, I saw, noticed on C-SPAN last night, the First Lady was talking to some group, I can't remember what it was, but she said, I'm dedicating myself to the President's program of education, improving Head Start, and I am going to take on as my responsibility the reading part of it. And as you know, we have Secretary Page here tomorrow, and I'll find out how does the First Lady intend to, enhance the reading portion of Head Start? And this might be something that they have in mind, I don't know, but we could sure take a look at it.
Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Fisher.
I would just wonder, as a suggestion, what about opening up and making it possible to accept donations and things like that for this?
Well, I don't know how Head Start is situated as far as receiving donations. Does anyone in the audience have expertise on or knowledge of that?
If, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hartung.
If a school district has a foundation, why, the foundation can receive the money and put it wherever they want, actually. And I know Lane County and Beaverton School District 48 and Hillsborough all have education foundations that can do it there.
Thank you. Well, it's not a bad idea. Certainly, I think there are citizens who would be very interested in helping in such an endeavor. I think that I would like to move this to Ways and Means so we can continue the discussion. There's elements that need further elaboration, I think. But I think that this is a proven program. The game comes with a guarantee. If it doesn't work, they refund the money. But I don't know of any other program in the game format where very young children engage in a real learning opportunity that compares to this. And so,
Mr. Chair, I don't think I see that the refund is a 60 days situation, and if we can ever get a government agency to get something and get it distributed and found out what it's like in 60 days, then we got a chance at a refund. But I would say probably that this is not going to be much of availability to work that kind of arrangement.
I appreciate that. I do appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, are we in a work session now?
No, we're not.
Okay.
I wish we had some kind of a guarantee like that on some of the reading programs we've got out there now.
Wouldn't that be neat? Any further discussion? We'll close the public hearing. And again, I did that without asking if anyone wanted to testify. We didn't have anyone sign up. Apparently no one wants to testify, so I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 593.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 593 to Ways and Means without recommendation.
Senator Hartung has moved to Senate Bill 593 to Ways and Means without recommendation. I would rather have had a recommendation, but I'll accept that motion. And
Mr. Chair, would you accept an amendment?
Sure. Yes, certainly.
I would be glad to furnish it with a due pass or a motion to accept or whatever they require down there.
Senator Fisher has moved to move it to Ways and Means with a recommendation, a due pass.
I don't want to cut my colleague out of the initial motion.
No, that's fine. I accept that amendment.
All right. No objections. So ordered. The bill, as amended, is before us. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
It wasn't an amendment to the bill. It was an amendment to the motion.
No, it didn't. Thank you. Thank you. That was a good correction. All right.
That was a fast amendment.
No further
issues
to come before us. What do we have coming up on Thursday? Do you have that information?
Next Thursday or Tuesday?
Tuesday. Tuesday. It's going to be. Woo! I'm.
nice and
I'm at Thursday.
We're starting to get busy. Starn, members of the committee, next Tuesday on March 6th. We have two bills that would perhaps repeal the SIM in the CAM and the way that students are tested It'd be norm reference tests instead of criterion reference tests. And I expect a lot of witnesses for that. And then on Thursday, we have a bill on autism and also the bill that would allow TSPC to certify Native American language teachers.
All right. Thank you. With that, we adjourn the Senate Committee on Education and